Eagles Entertainment.
Everything that moves, I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time. Let's go.
Touchdown.
You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another day, and we're doing some self-scouting as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 491. At the top of today's show, we've got Three and Out, where I chat with my friend Ross Tucker. Three big topics as the Eagles go into the bye week. What is at the top of Ross and I's mind? We're going to get through that there at the top of the show. After that, we've got a special edition of Chalk Talk, where for the first time here in this podcast, we're going to welcome in the professor himself from University of Pennsylvania, Professor Danez Selman. Really excited to catch up with Danez and talk through really the five things that he has been most impressed with, because he does so much work, so much research, so much time spent on this team. So I'm really excited to pick his brain and get his thoughts on this Eagles team there in the meat of the show. We've got a ton of extra analysis this week from our Eagles game plan crew. So Mike Quick, Ike Reese, Greg Cosell, and our host this week, Ashlyn Sullivan, stepping in, doing an outstanding job. All four of them are going to share some insights on their thoughts on this Eagles team as well. Now, before we get there, as always, make sure you head on over to Apple Podcasts, rate, review, subscribe, ask a question. If you've got a question, we'll answer it. We're going to answer one of those questions here in a few minutes on the show. Before we get there, though, I want to toss to a clip from tape study this week on Eagles game plan. Caught up with Eagles special teams coordinator Michael Clay this week on the show, and just talked through some of the more impressive plays from the special teams as a unit that has really improved this year, and also talked through coaching up a lot of these young players that we haven't seen on offense and defense yet, but who we have seen on special teams. So excited to talk through that with Coach Clay. Excited for you guys to hear that, and we'll go to that right now.
I will say there are a lot of plays to pick from here over the course of the first nine games. And this one was an easy one to pick because not just the offense being excited, Coach, but we spy you on the sideline. You got pretty juiced up after this play as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a kid's game. If you can't get excited for, you know, these guys work so hard from the time they get in Tuesday, getting their bodies right to playing Sunday in front of the link. I mean, it's pretty exciting, and, you know, you always want to play with a little bit of emotion, especially when you put all that work in.
Every week in this segment, we're talking about, you know, the mainline starters that everybody knows watching at home, but you get to work with a lot of the young guys on the roster that will be the stars year two, year three, year four. So you mentioned Keely Ringo, you mentioned Mekhi Garner.
Yeah.
What's it been like working with a lot of these young guys here this year?
Oh, it's been awesome. You know, a lot of these times these guys are the stars at their, you know, respective schools and everything, but having the opportunity to see these guys and see how much they got help, you know, especially like the guys on the outside. You got Bradberry, you got Slay, who play a lot of ball. They play a lot of defense, so they don't know what their role is going to be. But playing special teams, they can really affect the game, and they've been doing a really good job thus far, you know, first nine games in.
An outstanding decision there, Patrick Johnson as well. You talked about Mekhi making that decision in the kick return. What is it like just kind of coaching that out of guys? Because, you know, I'm sure they have to toe that line with, hey, I want to make a big block, but I also don't want to do anything to overstep and draw a flag either.
Correct. And we always try to preach, hey, Covey's going to make one miss. As long as he makes one miss, we'll be okay. And, you know, we want to play penalty-free football as much as possible, especially in the return game. And they've done a really good job. You know, the 3 years I've been here, they've done an outstanding job with that. So we keep preaching that every time. And we show film from around the league of, hey, what not to do. You know, everybody loves seeing football, even of their peers. So just showing them more and more of, hey, this is what we don't want, this is what we do want, it just engraves it in their mind.
I want to rewind back to like the spring. So, you know, March and April, and you go through the draft process with these guys. You know, Sidney Brown tests really well. He runs really well. Keely Ringo, you talk about his height, weight, speed. How exciting is that for you as a coach? You're like, oh man, like if I can get this guy into the building, what he can mean for our core four special teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And Howie and, you know, all the personnel, they do a great job, you know, trying to better our team. But guys that can run fast and are physical, you love to have on special teams because we're really just a one-track mind. Hey, this is your sole goal, your sole objective. You can do this really fast with some physicality, you'll be all right. And they've done a really good job of that the first half.
All right, so great stuff there from Michael Clay. And again, for that entire segment, go check out Eagles Game Plan. It'll drop this week on Sunday on the Eagles YouTube page. That said, let's get into the rest of the show. It's time now for Three and Out with Ross Tucker.
How about this for a start?
They've got him again!
What a defensive stop.
Slay's second pick of the game.
Oh, I'm going to have to call him big play.
And this defense does the job. One, two, three, and out.
All right, we're back for another edition of Three and Out. My friend Ross Tucker to talk through three things on the top of our mind as the Eagles now sit in the bye week, Ross. Everybody else taking a break here in the NovoCare complex, but you are hard at work.
Yeah, no, there is no break during football season.
What are we doing?
I'll talk to you the day after the Super Bowl if you want to break. I literally, Fran, and this is not complaining because I never call it work, but there's not a day where I'm not doing stuff that I have to do. And frankly, I think pretty much every one of those days, it's something that I'm getting compensated for. But 7 days a week, starting when like the Eagles preseason game started, and yeah, certainly since September came around.
No question. And, you know, that's what this is the life we chose. This is what this is the business we've chosen, to quote one Hyman Roth from Godfather 2. All right, let's go into first topic here. I'm going to go first. I want to talk through the Eagles run game. And I'm going to be honest, like, you know, it's been a big topic of conversation. We talked about this together, you and I, last week here on the show. And it is interesting. I think a lot of Eagles fans, Eagles media talking about it, the lack of the pop in the run game, particularly over the last month. Remember, the Eagles started the season up in New England. It was a solid showing on the ground in that game. Then they ran the Vikings out of the building. DeAndre Swift, breakout game. They go down to Tampa Bay. They have a great performance on the ground there. And I feel like since that point, it's been, you know, watching on film, I'm like, yeah, like, all right, the run game is, you know, DeAndre Swift running really hard. You still see, like, Lane Johnson and Jason Kelsey and Jordan Mailata. You see the highlight blocks. Like, all that stuff is still present. But at the end of the day, the numbers just aren't quite there, both from a volume standpoint and from an efficiency standpoint. So, you know, earlier this week, I did a little bit of a deep dive into some numbers. Like, all right, like zone scheme stuff versus gap scheme stuff, and trying to find, all right, is there some kind of trend here? Where did things kind of fall off? I'm gonna be honest, like, even comparing to last year, like, I'm not seeing a big thing where I'm like, yep, all right, that's the issue, right? And so I almost wanted to kind of ask you, the kind of taking the numbers to the side, because I was hoping to take that kind of approach. Have you ever been a part of a team where, you know, like, something's just like not clicking? And, you know, one play, it's this guy missed a block. Next play, this guy missed a block. Oh, there was a busted assignment here on this one. And then things just pop. And then it's we're back, you know, hitting the ground running.
Yes, often, primarily because I was on teams that weren't that great. But no, in all sincerity, you know, everybody always wants to point the finger at one thing when something's not going well. One person, one thing. We want to be able to label it. We want to be able to put it in a box and say, this is the issue. But oftentimes, especially in the running game, it isn't just one thing.
Yep.
It's something different every play. And also that they're very close. Like, you know, it's funny because the videos you do, Fran, are just unbelievable. And I'm guessing anybody that listens to this podcast checks out your YouTube videos and that you post on social media, because they're just incredible. And I thought you did an amazing job on the Kenny Gainwell touchdown run, which I love, by the way. I love, there's something so sweet about a guy diving over a defender to flip in the end zone. Like, he's not just doing it for the heck of it. Like, he's doing it because he had to do it to score the touchdown. I love that. But you did a really good job of highlighting the play design and sort of the fake wide receiver screen to the left, or tight end screen to the left, and the bodies that took, and Jalen Hurts being able to freeze two defenders with just the possibility that he would pull the ball. And then the good blocks they got at the point of attack by Lane Johnson and Tyler Steen, and then Kelsey pulling around. But you watch, and they're very close to busting out a lot more of these runs. Sometimes the scheme kind of has them. Like, sometimes the other team brought the safety down late and the Eagles didn't really account for it and they got them. Sometimes, you know, it's just a guy falls off a block and it's why it's only a 3-yard run. Sometimes the defender makes a really good play. Now, the reality is nobody really cares. They just want to see the Eagles run for more yardage.
Yep.
And a higher yards per carry. So that's something I would imagine that the Eagles spend a lot of time on during the bye week and just remind these guys. And I know Kelsey does, and he knows it. That's what makes offensive football so different than defensive football. Hmm. Defensive football, 9 guys could be garbage on the play, but Josh Sweat could kill the right tackle and get a sack, and it's a great play for the defense. On offense, if all 11 guys are not executing their assignment with a plus, like getting a plus on the play, they did what they were supposed to do, they blocked their guy, the play's probably not going to work. It really does take all 11, And right now for the Eagles, they're taking turns not getting a plus on the play.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, you know, you go back and I thought even my conversation with Greg earlier this week, he brought up the play. I think it was the second play of the game. They're running a gap scheme run to the left and Tyler Steen was, you know, he was like a split second late off the ball, getting out of his stance. And when he did, since he was a little bit late, when he got out, he tripped over Jason Kelce and stumbled. And when he stumbled, Lane Johnson, who was also pulling on the play from the backside, he trips over Steen. And so it's like, all right, well, that's why that play, you know, that's why that play got killed, right? And then, all right, and let's go to a couple drives later. And it's okay, they're going to run a counter play going the other way. And Landon Dickerson was just a little bit off on his landmark. Oh, the inside zone. Oh, this, the guard is a little bit late getting up to the second level. It's all like different schemes, different players. It's just one of those things where, all right, like at some point that's going to pop. And I honestly, like even reflecting back over the last few years, that's what has made like the consistent level of dominance on the ground, like so impressive because they were doing it at such a high level for such a long period of time.
And you can't say, well, they're stacking the box and the defense is more geared up for the run. On some plays, that might be the case, but you know, think about some of the games they've had this year, Fran. The Bucs game, the Vikings game, the Rams. Like the Eagles have had plenty of games this year,
yes,
where they almost were saying to the other team before the play, "We're running the ball," and they were still having success doing it.
Yep,
you know, consistently running it right at them, which, by the way, is really hard to do.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that we are accustomed over the last few years of being able to watch this team when the other team knows that they want to run the ball, still being able to run it and like, you know, assert their will that way, and they haven't been able to do that over these last couple of weeks. And so again, you know, from my untrained eye looking at it, it feels like there's not like one magic bullet answer to it. But the coaches may look at this over the course of this week, and that's what they're doing right now. Obviously, honestly, as we're having this conversation, looking through all the film, trying to see like, okay, what are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? How do we correct some of this stuff? Or lean more into the strengths? But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the answer is coming out of the bye. Let's go to your topic. Topic number two.
I want to talk about Dallas Goedert.
Good. Yep.
And, you know, there are reports out there that he has a broken forearm. I've seen 4 to 6 weeks, whatever. And what's really interesting, Fran, I almost forgot for a second that Dallas missed some time last year.
Yeah.
After that Commanders game, and that the Eagles offensively still performed really well. They still moved the ball. They still put points up. Because in my head, you know, there's a pretty good drop off from Goddard to the rest of the tight ends, right? I mean, Goddard's a top five tight end in the NFL. The other guys, you know, aren't really NFL aren't starting tight ends.
Yeah,
at least
right.
They haven't shown that as of yet. So let's just talk about the different possibilities, right? So, you know, the Eagles major in 11 personnel, which is one running back, one tight end, three receivers, but they do a decent amount of 12 personnel with Stoll, which means one back, two tight ends. And so they have 2 weeks now to come up with a plan for the Chiefs, but also just a plan for without Goddard. And so I guess I would imagine, you know, that we see more 11 personnel and not nearly as much 12 personnel, I would guess. So there's three receivers on the field more. Might we see at some point, Fran, some 10 personnel? Obviously, we might see more Calcaterra and Albert O. I guess I'm just curious if you remember, because I don't off the top of my head, what the Eagles did for the most part when Goddard was out last year.
So if my memory serves, they did not like drastically decline the amount of 20 or 12 personnel that they played last year after Goddard's injury. And what we just saw, it was a lot of Stoll and Calcaterra, and they kind of leaned into that and said, okay, like we're fine playing these two guys, even Calcaterra, you know, in his rookie season. Now this year, will they do that? You know, Calcaterra is coming off an injury of his own. He didn't play. He was not active last week. You know, they made the deal for Albert Okwuegbunam right before the season, just as roster cuts were happening. Yeah, he has played in the NFL and has had productive moments in the NFL. Really athletic player. He's in his third or fourth year. I'm interested to see, like, okay, how much does he get mixed in? What kind of impact can he have? He was active this past week against the Dallas Cowboys. And so I'm interested to see, okay, What is the answer from that standpoint? Or do they just say, all right, we're going to lean a little bit more into A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and maybe a little bit more Julio Jones as well, right?
Yeah, a couple things. One is Julio Jones is not a tight end. He cannot play tight end.
Yes, correct.
However, there are certain plays where he could run the route that Dallas Goedert ran.
Yep.
Because he is a bigger receiver and can do some of those things that Dallas did. Secondly, I cannot wait, Fran, till Albert O. And I'm going to go with Albert O. Fran spent a lot of time on that. He's a draft guy.
I was going to say, I remember when he first jumped onto the scene, you and I were still doing the college draft podcast together. It was like his sophomore year. And it was like, oh, this kid, you know, he's a redshirt freshman and he's tearing it up for Drew, catching passes from Drew Locke. And I feel like I was early on the Okwuegbunam pronunciation train because I'm a stickler for that. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, we got to learn this kid's name.
You take a lot of pride in it.
I try.
I give you a lot of credit for that. He didn't play in the preseason for the Eagles, so I didn't have to learn it or work on it. And hopefully they trade him before next preseason. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. But no, what I was going to say, Fran, is I can't wait till one of the next couple games where he catches a pass and has a nice gain. Because to me, when I think of the Eagles organization, that's what I think of. Like that, I think Howie Roseman is the best at what he does. And Albert O is the fourth tight end. They don't even need to have four tight ends on the roster. But I think Howie looked at it and said, this guy's got some ability. He's made some plays in the league. And what happens if something happens to Goddard or Calcaterra? We got to have another tight end who's a receiving threat. So he signs Albert O. Nobody knows who he is, blah, blah, blah. Just in case. It's a contingency plan. Nobody is better at depth or contingency plans than Howie Roseman.
Yeah, and I think that this coaching staff has also been known to put guys in position to do what they do well, right? You know, whether it's run game, pass game. So, hey, you know what? Like, Albert Okwuegbunam doesn't need to be a complete player, but if this is what he does well, let's find different ways in the game plan. And he was active, again, he was active this past week, so there was a chance that he could have been pressed into play time a few days ago against the Cowboys. What are some ways that we can lean into his strengths? And is that better than say, all right, let's put AJ Brown in this spot or let's put Julio Jones in that spot and just figure out how we can best move the football down the field. So that will be certainly one of the big topics of discussion here in the next few weeks around this team. Let's now go to topic number three. This one curated from our listeners. This one came from Better Him Than Me on Apple Podcasts. And I'm interested to get your thoughts here on this one. It seems like the only way to stop the brotherly shove is the refs incorrectly calling offsides when it's actually just Jason Kelce's left hand down on the ball. Can you tell him to maybe wear a pink wristband on his left hand so that refs can know that it is his hand? Jason Kelce has talked about this over on the New Heights podcast and said, like, yeah, I'm not wearing a different color glove. I don't need referees being able to see where my hands are on every single play. I'm not trying to draw holding penalties left and right. He's been very good about not getting flagged over the course of his career, but I wanted to get your thoughts on the glove or wristband element of this discussion.
You know what's funny about that? There was a stretch there where Kelce was penalty prone.
Yeah,
if you remember.
Yeah,
it was like when he was on screens and stuff, he would reach guys so bad that as they were trying to backdoor him, he would throw him to the ground and they would call him for, it wasn't a hold. It was an awesome block, but in the NFL, they call you for hold. He had to learn to, like, okay, I can't throw this guy to the ground, even though I easily could leverage him against himself. And that's not a hold. That bothers me, but whatever. Yes. Well, I don't think this will happen again because I think the Eagles are very, very conscious of it now. They're not going to line up in the neutral zone on the offensive side of the ball. So I don't think he needs to do this. I mean, a wristband, I think, would be fine as long as it's not like a different colored glove. But a wristband, yep. I think, and tell the refs ahead of time would be fine. It's just remarkable the success they have with that play and the fact that nobody can do it the same way. And now I know they want to get as much up on the ball as they can. But now that they know that the refs have clearly been told to call it so closely, the Eagles are being conservative, I think, lining up a little bit off because they don't need it. It'll be successful anyway without taking the chance of the penalty. It's unbelievable how good they are at it.
Yeah, it's certainly something that it's a hot button issue around the NFL and the NFL media circles for sure because everybody's got an opinion on it. I know you and I are both pro brotherly.
Well, and here's the thing. My big issue with it, Fran, I talked to Gene Steratore last week on the Ross Tucker podcast about this. So everybody's talking about banning it. How do you ban it? Like, right. What do you say? You can't push an offensive player, can't push another offensive player from behind. You sure about that? So anytime it's like third and one or you're near a goal line and the guy's fighting, so the defense can have five guys come in, but the offense can't have any. To me, that would be totally unnatural and go against what the sport is. People always say like, oh, that's not how the way football was meant to be played.
It's literally the original shots of football. It's 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Looking exactly
there was no forward pass.
Yeah, right.
In fact, the what it looks like, that was the flying wedge. That's what football was back then.
Sure. So we talk about Jason Kelce, and I did pick this question specifically because I did want to tease that project that I talked to you about. I mentioned that I mentioned this on the podcast last week, that the reason why we hadn't been doing these late week podcasts was because I was working on a project. It is going to drop next week when the Eagles come out of the bye week over on the Eagles YouTube page. I did a full segment where I watched Ross every single snap of Jason Kelce's career going back to 2011. And I pulled all the best plays, all the best blocks. I looked at all the run concepts, the pass concepts, screen game. Basically, I'm making the argument why Jason Kelce is going to be a Hall of Famer, man. And it's a fun segment. It's a long one. It's just about 25, 26 minutes. But I know you'll enjoy it. I know you're looking forward to watching it. And I think our listeners will as well.
That is going to be amazing. I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. And I'm excited for it. Again, it'll be dropping on the Eagles YouTube page next week. Ross, thanks so much for joining us here. We'll be breaking down the Eagles and Chiefs game next week here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Enjoy your week. Where are you heading this week?
I got a doubleheader this week. So Saturday, Holy Cross at Army, and then for CBS Sports Network. And then Monday night, I'm in the booth with Kevin Harlan, Broncos at the Bills, Westwood One Radio.
Beautiful. Well, West Point, just beautiful this time of year in early November, late October. So enjoy. I know you know that as well. You've caught a lot of games up there. We will talk to you next week.
Can't wait. Thank you, man.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
All right, joining us this week here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast for the first time, very, very excited to welcome in Dainese Selman. He is a professor at the University of Penn. You may know him from other Eagles podcasts or other appearances that he has made, but for the first time here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky, Dainese, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Brian. It is a massive honor to be invited. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely, man. So look, before we dive into the reason why you're here, I do want to give our listeners a little bit of a peek inside like your mind, your background, like what your whole process. You're a season ticket holder, right? You sit in the same seats every week at Lincoln Financial Field. How long have you been a season ticket holder? Take us through your whole process here.
Yeah, I graduated from college in 2000 and moved to Philly, and I've been a season ticket holder ever since. So I got the last couple of years at the Vet.
Yep.
I've been to just about all the games at the Link.
Yeah, all the games at the Link. And then take us through your process. I know you listened to Marilyn Mike from your seat during the game, and then also just like through the week, like how much work you put into studying this team.
Yeah, my wife will complain about this part of it since it's not my job. I do this as a hobby. I want to make sure I'm prepared for every game. I'm watching the film of the opponent from the previous week, making depth charts that I'll post on Twitter before the game. Trying to be ready for pre-snap for what's going to happen on the next play. I'm taking notes of every drive. People who sit around me will often ask me if I work for somebody, that kind of thing. I've got my headphones in listening to Marilyn Mike, WIP has the delay. So I actually have a good AM radio to get the Delaware feed, which is actually live. So, that's the degree to which, I make sure I'm ready.
Well, we just had Ross Tucker on, and I remember, when Ross and I first met and started working together a little bit, this is like a decade ago now, he refers to like the sickness, like the people that are like obsessed with football. You 1000% have the sickness, man. I regret to inform you, and I'm sure your family and friends are all very aware of that. So that said, let's get into the reason why I bought you here. And I thought, it's bye week. self-reflection, self-scouting, just taking stock of this team right now. And I thought, who would be better than someone who I know obviously puts in all this work and has such passion for this team and for this offense and this defense in terms of, all right, what are the five things that you're most excited about? It's new coordinators on both sides. There's been a lot of change this offseason. And I kind of left it open to you. And so I was very lazy with setting up this segment, but I'm excited to get your thoughts here. Your first thing that you're just top of your mind where you have been, you know, most pleased with what you've seen so far in 2023?
Well, there are a lot of things to be pleased about, obviously. Let's not, you know, lose sight of the fact that this team is 8-1 and has the best record in the NFL and has now for 2 years. To look at something that we weren't sure was going to be the case coming into the season, or at least after those first few weeks, people were complaining about, you know, is Jalen Hurts going to regress, right? And one of the stats that really jumps out at me about Jalen Hurts this year, especially as he's battling through this injury, is that he's currently leading the NFL in completion percentage over expectation, which, you know, Next Gen Stats keeps track of expected completion percentage using player tracking data. And then they compare that to the actual completion percentage. And Jalen Hurts has the biggest discrepancy between the two. And looking at it closely, his actual completion percentage of around 69% ranks sixth in the league. But his expected completion percentage, according to Next Gen Stats, is ranked 29th. It's only 62%. So by comparison, Patrick Mahomes has a lower completion percentage despite having a league-leading expected figure, and he's actually below expectation. And so one of the things that is interesting about this, first of all, it means he's making, like, you know, difficult throws, and he's making them very well. And we've seen that on the film, like the throw to Devontae Smith last week.
Yep.
On that crosser against cover two, there was the touchdown pass to Devontae Smith as well. Just incredible throws in the last couple of games here, especially as he's had to stay in the pocket due to injury. And actually, I'm curious what you think about this. Like, what are some of the reasons that the expected completion percentage is so low? Like, is it just that he's more willing to take chances? Is it something about the way the offense is schemed? You know, I'm curious what you think about that. I have a few theories, but I'm wondering what you think.
Yeah, I'm interested to get your thoughts on it as well. I think that, you know, just like off the top of my head, you know, when I think of the structure of this offense and I think, okay, you know, looking at like Next Gen Stats, which is where this above expectation stat comes from. I think when you look at that, you know, the one thing that they've put out, I know they just did it this week after the touchdown to Devontae Smith down the left sideline was, you know, Jalen Hurts has thrown more touchdowns off go balls. I know that was a stat last year as well, was that the Eagles ran as many go balls as anybody and they hit as many go balls as anybody. And those are low percentage throws for, you know, the average NFL quarterback wide receiver tandem. Cause you're, you know, you've got a small mailbox to fit the ball into down the field. You're outside the numbers. Typically outside the numbers throws are lower level chance of hitting than inside the numbers between the middle of the field. But I think when you look at their willingness to do that, I know AJ Brown this year has like made more catches with under 1 yard of separation than anybody. There's a stat like that. I know John Clark used that on Eagles game plan last week. You know, I think when you look at some of those numbers, so to your point, structure of the offense, the receiver is willing and able to make these tight window or contested throws and doing it at a really high rate. And then, I think regardless, a lot of people will point to, you know, Jalen Hurts, and we think back to like 2020 and 2021 and say, oh, you know, a lot of easy button, like screen game, RPO. That's not really the structure of this offense, right? I mean, there's certainly like our RPO is there, the screen game is there, and some of our fans like wish the screen game wasn't there as often it is, but they're like 21st or 22nd in screen percentage in the league. Like this is not a high volume screen offense. Right. You know, so I think that, yeah, like to me, I think it's a little bit of the structure and then also the personnel and their ability to come through on the other side of it.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I was wondering if like the screens, I mean, I know people complain about the screens, but it's like, you know, it's around 10% of the passing plays, which is below average. And also you see like Hurts is third in the league with 20 plus air yard attempts on the season. He has 41 of those. He's third in average air yards to the sticks. One of the four or five quarterbacks in the league whose average throw is actually past the sticks. I mean, that's something that is rare in the NFL. And he's also fourth in average attempted air yards. And I think that goes hand in hand with being fourth to last or whatever it is in expected completion percentage, right? And at the end of the day, like if you're completing those passes, you know, it doesn't matter that they're considered difficult by the player tracker data.
It's interesting because now I'm thinking back to last year when the Eagles were getting ready to play the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it was Kenny Pickett's rookie year, George Pickens, his rookie year. And I'm thinking back because I remember that was coming out of the bye week, so we're right around the same area, you know, time frame. And that offense was struggling, just as it is struggling currently in Pittsburgh. And their offense, you look at it and it's like, yeah, that one of the big issues with it is that it's a lot of low percentage throws. And then you start to look at, all right, well, yeah, it's a lot of fade balls. It's a lot of go balls. It's a lot of ISO ball. There's not a lot of 2 and 3 man route concepts. It's more just, all right, like Kenny Pickett, drop back, find your matchup and go. The difference being now that you look at their receiving core in Pittsburgh versus what the Eagles have here. You look at that offensive line versus what the Eagles have here. And that allows Jalen to say, like, okay, like, I can sit back and drop back and deliver this throw. I can drive. That is a low percentage of probability completion, but I've got the ability. I throw one of the best deep balls in football, and I've got guys that can go up and get it. And so I think it's the entire ecosystem that allows him to be able to make those low percentage throws and, again, come out successful.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see some of the same passing concepts that other teams run, the flood concepts, yep, the three-level stretches that you guys talk about a lot on the show. It seems like when other teams run those, the quarterback is almost always throwing the flat or the shallow, yep, or the, you know, right, like at most the intermediate route, which those are usually designed to hit. And Jalen won't hesitate to just throw that go ball to AJ, yep, Brown, right? And we saw him catch a couple of touchdowns on that last year. So that's, yeah, no, that's a really, yeah.
Or even like the clear, well, I mean, like the clear out route on Dagger, right? Like where he's like, okay, I'm willing to take that alert. I'm going to take that deep, yeah, ball, you know, and willing to push the envelope in that way. What would be number two for you?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, number two is, I mean, one of the things that those low percentage throws might make you think is that this offense is going to be high variance, right? Like that certain things might not be sticky from game to game, from year to year. And through 9 games, I was just looking last night at this, the comparison between last year and this year, you know, people will see me on the street and they'll be like, oh, like, you know, what do you think? Like the offense just isn't as good this year. Like what's wrong? Whatever. But you look at the numbers, this team is averaging more points per drive than last year at this time, ranking third last year, third this year as well. EPA per play is fourth. It was third last year. Success rate is fifth. It was third last year. Series conversion rate is the same as last year, third this year, third last year. Basically, this team is statistically the same in all of the numbers that are actually sticky and you know, that really measure the efficiency of an offense through 9 games last year and also this year. And when you look at the entire body of work from last year, it's not any different. I mean, it's not like the team had an incredible explosion in the second half last year. The only numbers that aren't the same are the two least sticky ones, which usually lead to regression. And those are turnovers and red zone, right? Like, so in turnovers and red zone, team was top five in both of those last year. And yep, that hasn't been the case this year, but we're already seeing the regression with red zone. And I think we'll see something similar with turnovers as well. I mean, like, yep, it's just not something that I would be concerned with.
Yeah, the red zone, I know they were like after like week 3, week 4, they were 26th or 27th in the league. And I checked on this, I believe it was on Monday, and they're like 11th or 12th now. You know, so really quickly.
Yeah, 12th or 13th, depending on which
something
model
you're looking, yeah, at.
Some of them throw out the kneel downs or whatever. But right, yeah, I mean, last year was off the charts at this time. It was 75%, yep, which was right, second, right? And here it's a more normal 56%, but that's still above league average. And again, like you just expect there to be some regression there. So
exactly. And also, like, you know, numbers are down like across all offenses in the league right now, but so I think it's important that you note, like, yeah, like maybe some of these numbers are down, but where they rank in the NFL is, you know, they're still like, all right, third versus fourth or fifth versus third, like you're still have you know, that continuity there in terms of, you know, contextually across the rest of the league. And I do think that that's important just to kind of keep that context, and to your point as well, like the expectations are different this year versus last year at this time.
I think that is by far the biggest difference. I mean, if this exact season, these 9 games had been played at the start of last year, everyone would be like, oh my God, like what, like Jalen Hurts has exploded and this team is amazing. And, you know, basically exactly what happened last year, because the seasons that are being played, at least on the offensive side of the ball, I think have been virtually identical in terms of the amount of success.
And I know you take in a lot of like league wide content as well. And, you know, this is what happens to the elite offenses and the elite quarterbacks as well. I can remember like listening to shows in week 2 this year where everyone's worried about, oh, Josh Allen, like he's playing too much hero ball. Like he's got to cut this out. And then 3 weeks later, oh, he's back in the MVP conversation. You hear this with Mahomes, like, oh, they what's wrong with this offense? And it's like, yeah, like, pump the brakes. Like, elite quarterbacks go through. It's not going to be elite every single time you touch the field. And I think that, you know, it's honestly, it's a testament to what Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown and Nick Sirianni and the rest of that offense has done over the course of the last year and change, that they are now like kind of grouped into that category of like, if it's not perfect, then the sky is falling.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also been fun to watch the offense change a little bit during the course of the season as we've seen defenses handle this offense differently, right? Mm. So there were some plays that it seemed like they were working every time last year, like that, you know, the curl flat RPO that we see all the time, you know, that kind of thing. And it seemed like defenses had a little bit more of an answer for that at the start of this year, maybe bringing a scraper in, maybe bringing an extra guy, whatever. And I feel like some of the more high volume plays have changed this year. I think we're seeing, maybe it's just like anecdotal for me, but we're seeing more of that like two-man China 7 combination with AJ Brown and Dallas Goedert. Seems to be a go-to on money downs, and you know, we saw it early in the game against Dallas as well. That kind of thing, I think, is always fun. It's always fun. You know, I teach game theory. Like, I love that kind of, you know, the defense adjusts and they best respond to what you're doing, and then you have to best respond to what they're doing. You know, we saw those the drop eight coverages that Minnesota used early in the season. And maybe it's just like the teams that we're playing, but it's like you haven't seen as much of that kind of stuff recently. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, obviously, if it had kept working, teams would have kept doing it. So we're seeing the adjustments that have overcome those things.
That's a really good point. All right. So what would be item number three on your list?
Item number three is first downs. This has been like something that I've been curious about really for the last 2 years, but it really jumps out this year. Okay. The Eagles are 28th in the league, which is, you know, sounds really bad, at converting first downs on first down. Like, they're only getting first downs 17% of the time on first down itself, which is well below league average, and like I said, ranks 28th. However, Eagles are fourth in the league and virtually tied for first at 78% of eventually getting a first down, like during the series overall, so regardless of the down. So that's because of a very, very high number of first downs converted on the other downs, obviously, second down, third down, and also league high on fourth down, which of course helps this a lot. And it made me wonder, like, just like digging deeper into what's going on first down. And it's strange because the run game success rate on first down ranks in the top five. Okay. And that means that when these series are starting with runs, a lot of times the run is getting 3, 4, 5, 6 yards and setting up shorter second downs. And that's the design, right? Like, you're not expecting a first down run to get 10 yards, right? And so that's just by design. Now, the dropback success rate ranks in the bottom 5 or 10 in this. And also the EPA per play on first down is a disaster, but that's just because there have been 9 turnovers on first down. So that's just a little bit of luck there. Like, the pick six against Miami was on first down. That's not really a first down thing, right? Like, that's just like something that happened to be on first down. So I'm curious what you think about this as well. Like, whether different coaching staffs might have different philosophies about what first down is for. You know what I mean? Like, like, is first down really designed to maximize the probability of getting a first down on first down, right? Like, are you taking shots, what, et cetera? Or are you trying to get 5, 6, 7 yards on that play? Because the Eagles have a disproportional number of plays. I tweeted this last night. I mean, it's a kind of nerdy chart, but it's like a bar graph of exactly how many plays there have been of exactly each yard number of gains.
Outstanding.
And it drops off a cliff, like right at 10. So there's like a lot of play. Like, there are like 11 plays that got 8 yards, 11 plays that got 9 yards, 11 plays that got 7 yards. And then there's like only 2 plays that got 10 yards all season or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, there just happens to be this major drop off. And I'm wondering if it's just that a lot of these, the way the routes are designed, the way the plays are designed, it just doesn't, you don't need to get 10 yards on first down. And that's why, you know, the Eagles know they're going to go for it on fourth down anyway. And sure. You know, that kind of thing. That is that part of it. So
that's a really good question. You know, what I would say is that every team, you know, all offensive staffs work a little bit differently, but from a lot of the offensive staffs that I understand and I've gotten to know, is that, you know, when a team is putting together a game plan, it's not like Nick Sirianni goes into a room and he go up into a tower and he comes out on Friday with a game plan, right? All these guys are working in conjunction together. And, you know, we know, like, all right, Jeff Stoutland, he is the run game coordinator. You've got Kevin Petullo as the pass game coordinator. But typically what you have is like different coaches, different position coaches are going to be in charge of different parts of the game game plan. So when you see Brian Johnson holding up the play sheet, I'm saying this for our listeners, obviously you know this, but you know, you see all the different colors and all the different boxes. Those are all different play calls for different situations in the game. And so it might be red zone, low red zone, goal line, third down, backed up, all these different situations over the course of a game, 2 minute, right? All these different situations here. All right, here's my menu in each of these. First down and second down are going to have that's going to be the base, the biggest chunk of that sheet. And you're going to have that. All right, these are our play calls for first and second down in this game. Here's our play calls for third and long, third and medium, third and short. And you're going on from there. So yeah, there are different game plans and therefore different play calls and play designs for different areas. I do want, you know, I don't know what the Eagles mindset necessarily is. One other thing I thought of while you were talking though, I know you are a big proponent of like EPA per drive and like success rate per drive versus like EPA per play and success rate per play. And by the way, also side note, I'm taking like another side note here for our listeners who are like, what is EPA? What is DVOA? What is success rate? What does all this mean? I would implore you to go back and check out the podcast I did with James Gilman of the Eagles Analytics Department at the end of August. It was like right towards the end of training camp where we dove into all of these terms and what they mean. So if there is some confusion, you can go make sure you go listen to that episode where we dive deep into all of that. It was a great conversation with James. I learned a lot. That said, you are like I said, you are big into like the per drive numbers versus per play. Why is that? Why do you feel like you get more value out of that?
Yeah, so I think the per drive and per series numbers are really valuable. And per and just to be clear on series, like by a series, I mean like anytime it's first down, right? That's the start of a series. So when you get a first down, like that starts a new series. And I think measuring like what percentage of the time a team converts those first downs into a first down eventually is a more important measure than EPA per play or success rate per play, because you can be unsuccessful, you know, extreme case, right? If you're unsuccessful, like you get 0 yards on the first three downs and you convert every fourth and 10, right? Like that's the same thing as if you just converted it on first down. In fact, it might even be better because you're tiring out the defense and running more clock and things like that. Now, obviously that's not sustainable, right? Like that, and that's a very extreme, but the EPA per play, if you get 10 yards over four plays, is going to be a quarter of what it is if you get 10 yards on one play. And the actual impact on the game is the same. Like it's still your ball. You're in the same place, right? And so I think the EPA per play numbers reward explosive teams and teams that you know go down the field quickly. The Eagles lead the league in plays per drive. And I think that's something that when you're watching a game as a fan is a very comforting thing, right? Because it means that you have the ball. It means the other team doesn't have the ball. Like, it's like there are more, you know, like you break down the film every week. I watch the film and I take notes on every play every week. And it's nice that there are way more offensive plays than defensive plays most weeks, right? Like this last week was an exception, but almost every game this year, the offense has had more plays than the defense. And that doesn't mean, you know, that's a good thing. You know, like that's something that you're sustaining drives. It might be taking you longer to get down the field, but that can be tiring out a defense, frustrating the other team's offense, staying on the sideline and all that. And it doesn't help EPA per play, but I think like the, you know, the per drive and the per series numbers are going to be rewarded by that.
Yeah, and that's the when you talk about like the Eagles' success rate on third down and fourth down, their ability to string together those long drives. Certainly, obviously, that's a big reason why they lead in plays per game and plays per drive. Warren Sharp just put out a stat on Monday, I believe it was, where the Eagles lead the NFL in yards gained on opening drives. So just being able to get out to that fast start and kind of just get the ball rolling. All right, like hey, you know what? We're going to move the ball down the field. That Gainwell touchdown to start things off this year or this week against Dallas, that was only their second opening drive touchdown of the year. But they consistently put themselves in position to score points on these opening drives, which again just kind of gets the ball rolling there and gaining momentum offensively. Let's go to item number four.
Item number four, we'll switch to the defensive side of the ball. And one thing that I've noticed, just kind of a tactical change from last year, obviously a different defensive coordinator this year.
Yep.
And this is interesting because, you know, the defensive line coach and the edge rushers coach, you know, are the same, right? So this is probably coming from the defensive coordinator. Last year, the Eagles were in five-man fronts 42% of the snaps. And half of those were base defense, you know, 5-2-4. And the other half were the 5-1-5 penny fronts, right?
Yep.
Where you have five defensive linemen, one linebacker, and then just the regular nickel defense behind it. This year, that 42% number is down to 23% five-man fronts. And the biggest difference is that those penny fronts, the 5-1-5 fronts, are being used much less. A lot of times those were being used on early downs, even against light personnel, as a measure to defend the run last year. And one thing that I found interesting is that it's like, well, is that, are we sacrificing like rush defense, you know, in doing this in order to help the pass defense? But when you look at the rush defense last year, the Eagles were 21st in DVOA and rush defense, 23rd in rush success rate. This year, those are up to second and eighth. Like, I don't know if people realize the Eagles are second in DVOA and rush defense this year. And that was a great episode with you and James. And I do, encourage people to listen to that. But DVOA is basically like a per play efficiency metric that controls for opponent quality and whatnot. Yep. And it's just interesting to see that like this year's version of the defense doesn't seem to need the 5-man fronts to defend the run. And I think like a big part of that is that, you know, Javon Hargrave was not the best run defender, right? He was on the field a lot. And maybe like you needed to have a nose tackle next to him in order to defend the run. Whereas this year, all the guys who are playing in that defensive tackle spot are very good at defending the run as well as rushing the passer, right? So I think that this is an encouraging sign to be able to handle the run with 4-man fronts, in that it may translate into better results in the passing game once the secondary gets healthy, gets to know each other. You know, Kevin Byard just got here.
Yep.
The injuries at nickel and the rotating cast there, and you're switching from big nickel to regular nickel, and you're playing two rookies in a spot that they weren't trained in college. You know,
I think
we understand all those issues in the passing game right now are things that can be worked out. But I think structurally, it'll be useful in the long run to have, instead of having that edge rusher dropping into zone coverage, which is what often happens in those penny fronts on passing downs, you're going to have an actual, player who can play coverage there.
It's a really good point. And there's a lot of different things to like draw off that too, right? Where we could talk about the step that Jordan Davis has made this year, because he only played as the nose tackle in those 5-man fronts. That was the only time we really saw Jordan Davis a year ago. And now this year they're able to play more 4-man fronts, and that it is not, restricted his ability to get on the field and to make an impact. He's making plays both against the run and against the pass in these 4-man fronts. And so that certainly has been a boost defensively. And to your point, if you're going to like truly say, okay, we're going to play in that, quote unquote Fangio style of, playing umbrella coverage and playing more bodies in the deep end to be able to defend against the pass. All right, you're going to play 4 down with 2 backers. When that person does have to drop out, it's not Josh Sweat or Hassan Reddick dropping out. It is instead going to be, Zach Cunningham or N'Kobe Dean or Nicholas Morrow. And so that certainly helps from that standpoint. But being able to continue to mix those fronts in has also been beneficial. We saw the sack this week where Fletcher Cox and N'Kobe Dean got there. Josh Sweat was dropping out. Even still, I believe that was a 4-man front. Right? I don't think that was a five. I don't think that was a 5-1-5 look. I'm pretty sure that was a 4-2 front. I'd have to go back through my notes to go and find that. But still having that flexibility with those guys is certainly also advantageous for this defense.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And of course, as soon as you say that, I feel the need to check my notes. And that was a big nickel. That was just a big nickel.
Yep, there you go.
It was a regular 4-man front for that one. And it was an exchange, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. N'Kobe inserted. He came from depth, and Josh Sweat was able to drop out. So, no, I love that point there about the defensive fronts. All right, point number five?
All right. Point number five is that this is hardly like after all these nerdy metrics and talk of tactics and everything. Point number five is going to be very easy to understand, and it is that things are good. The Eagles are 24-3. I think sometimes we forget this. Okay,
sure,
so I just want to make it very clear that things are good. The Eagles are, and by good I mean historically good. I mean the Eagles are 24-3 in the last 27 games. This includes playoffs, in which Jalen Hurts has started. I mean, that is ridiculous. I mean, he won 8 games in a row to start last year. He lost 1 game. He then just casually won another 8 games in a row after that, okay? And then he lost 1 game. It was a big game, but he lost that 1 game. Then this year, 8-1 to start the season. That's going 8-1 3 times in a row. I mean, like, when a team goes 8-1 over a 9-game stretch, you remember that. You're like, oh, remember in like, you know, back in 2004 when we started, you know, like whatever, like we talk about it for decades. This team has just gone 8-1 with the starting quarterback three times in a row. And it's 24-3 in the last 27 games. And I can almost promise you that that's not going to happen again in our lifetimes. I mean,
that
like,
is not
I,
sticky. I really just,
yeah, it's not something that you would expect to happen. It's not something that happens normally. And fans' expectations have been so inflated by last year's team that we may lose sight of that, right? Like we're breaking down plays, talking about how that mistake almost led to a disaster and this mistake could have cost us, you know, like it's all like this could have happened, that could have happened, right? Like we're making up hypotheticals about how things could have gone wrong, you know, over the course of a game and whatnot. Meanwhile, other teams, Super Bowl contenders, right, are praising their teams for almost winning games, right? They're talking about how they could have won a game that they lost by 24 points if it hadn't been for a single injury in the game, you know, not to name names. They're rationalizing away, you know, three-game losing streaks and saying it's because of this and it's because of that. Meanwhile, the Eagles haven't lost three games in a row in years, right? Like, yeah. I mean, like, I think, you know, when you compare this team to other teams, and it's so easy to lose track of that because like we're watching every play of the Eagles, right? Like, and a lot of fans are like are focused in on every mistake and thinking about what could have gone wrong. And it's just our in Philly, that's just our mentality. We wouldn't want it any other way, right? But it's worth being aware that what we're doing is talking about how things could have gone wrong, and in other cities, people are actually praising their team for almost winning, right? Like there's just like a, it's really nice to be in this position. And you know, I bike down to all the games and I can feel like as I'm biking to the stadium, like the amount of confidence I have in this team, like no matter who we're playing, no matter what game it is, you know, whether it's the NFC Championship game or week 9 or whatever, I have more confidence in this team than I've ever had, you know, like, and I have this, like, you know, I'm already thinking about, you know, I got to meet you in person in Phoenix last year, and I hope we can hang out again in Vegas this year, you know, like, and it's something that I'm very confident will happen. And I just think, you know, I just want to make sure every fan like enjoys these times, because I promise it will not stay this way.
it cannot stay this way. It's like AJ Brown going 125 6 weeks in a row. Like at some point he's going to have a 66 yard performance. That's going to happen. Obviously enjoy the good time, the great times while they last, and hopefully they last for at least another half a season here in Philadelphia. Dana, this has been awesome, man. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much for having me, friend.
Just outstanding stuff there from Dane Nis. Really happy to have him here on the show. I teased earlier that we've got a lot of extra analysis from our Eagles game plan crew. So we've got Ike Reese, Mike Quick, Greg Cosell, Ashlyn Sullivan, that due to time constraints couldn't squeeze all of this in, but we kept it all here for you. Let's go to the Eagles game plan crew.
Greg, I'm so glad you talked about the growth of Jalen Hurts, because this truly is high level. When the play starts, there's seven men at the line of scrimmage, and you don't know where – you really don't know what's going to happen, but post-snap, he's able to decipher what's going on, and not only getting the ball into the right window, right person, but there's so many other things that could have taken place. He could have thrown it short to his tight end, but that's not going to get you to the mark. You really have to appreciate the high level of quarterback play that we're starting to see from Jalen Hurts, particularly when you look at a play like this.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Q, and the thing I really liked about it, too, is that was a later in the down throw. Yes. He had to wait for all that to develop, and then the bodies get closer to you, so you have to stay in the pocket. And to me, one sign of a quarterback's development is when he's patient, feels comfortable staying in the pocket later in the down. You know this from when you played. There's routes that take a little more time, and the quarterback has to stay there. And in the NFL, the body starts to squeeze you a little bit, and you just can't take off. And I think that's another area we've seen Jalen continue to improve.
Yeah, G, and not just throughout his career, but really over the course of this season, when you talk about that patience and allowing these routes to develop. And you got to give a lot of credit to this offensive line. I look at this play, and the first thing that I notice is the pocket that has developed around him. And the fact that the offensive line are passing off pass rush games up front, and Jalen isn't quick to escape to his right and extend the play. He's staying in the pocket, and he's allowing these plays to develop. So you don't necessarily gain that trust by osmosis. You have to be able to trust your guys up front. And that's what I'm noticing, is that the offensive linemen giving the quarterback time for these plays to develop, and Jalen trusting them.
Yeah, and that allows his vision to really, really be good, because instead of worrying about pressure, because it's just human nature sometimes when you get squeezed to feel like, hey, I'm going to just take a peek down for a sec to see, hey, maybe I feel something to my left or my right, but to stay focused. And one other point I think is really worth making about Jalen Hurts. You know, I get to watch a lot of tape of a lot of quarterbacks, and he doesn't miss layups. And that might sound like a simple thing, but he is not missing the routine throws. And you cannot miss routine throws in this league to be a high-level quarterback. And he does not miss those throws.
This is also, G, real quick, where you see quarterbacks taking their game to the next level.
Yep.
You know, Q mentioned that Goddard is open underneath, but it's 3rd and 9. That's where the Dallas Cowboys want Jalen to throw the ball underneath to Dallas Goddard, and they're going to come up and make the tackle. It takes a different level quarterback to be able to be patient, sit in that pocket, not bite on the cheese that the defense wants you to bite on, take that underneath throw, but yet be courageous, stand in the pocket, and allow Devontae the time to get open and then thread that through a tight window. I think that's the evolution that we're seeing from Jalen Hurts of being a competent starting quarterback, reaching that elite quarterback level. That's what the elite quarterbacks do in this league.
Great point, Ike, because Smith had to work all the way across the field from the other side of the formation, and you've got to wait till he gets into that zone void. You can't throw that early, and you can't throw it later. You'll take him right out of bounds.
Well, the bye week means we have a lot to discuss, but it is not all good news. Dallas Goedert, this injury, we're not sure how long he's going to be out, but we know, Mike, it's going to be a blow to this Eagles offense. We've seen what's happened when he is not in the game. He's a very important player. How are the Eagles going to make up for this?
And I look at it from a defensive standpoint, right? I'm saying to myself, okay, that's one less potent threat I have to worry about now. Right. So now I have the ability to devote more attention to an A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith. So when I look at the impact of losing Dallas in the offense, that's the way I sort of see it. Not so much as who can replace him in his production standpoint,
right,
but how it becomes a little bit more, or it may become a more difficult way to run your offense, because now defenses have one less player they have to necessarily focus on. So you're going to have somebody step up to at least make that defense pay attention to the middle of the field, because that's the one thing coming into defending this Eagles offense is that you needed to know not only where number 11 and number 6 were at, but you have to know where number 88 is at all times, and you don't want him to wreck the offense because he has the path of least resistance in the middle of the field. Those are the easier throws for quarterbacks. So when I look at the absence of Goddard over this time, I wonder how it will impact the offense from an effective standpoint, because a defense has one less player they have to necessarily focus on.
When Dallas Goedert's on the field, you really have to pay attention to him.
Yeah.
And you haven't had the production from the other tight ends. You know, you got Jack Stoll, you got Calcaterra. You don't know the health of them.
Yeah.
But hopefully, after the bye week, all of these guys are healthy. But you're right. There's just so much to be concerned about when he's not on the field.
And I will say this, though, when you turn to it to good news, A.J. Brown, what a year he is having. It seems like he can handle more. And it's funny, every time I'm in the locker room and I bring up another stat that he's accomplished, he's like, enough with the numbers. He just doesn't care about the accolades. But maybe this is something where they turn to A.J. Brown, because he seems like he can handle more on his plate.
Oh, no doubt about that. Listen, A.J. Brown is playing at an all-time level right now. By the time this season is over with, he stays healthy. He's going to break all types of records when it comes to franchise records and maybe some of these NFL records when you look at the production that he's put out through the first 9 games of the season. It's one of those situations where you're saying to yourself, this is his year. This is his year. He's arguably the best wide receiver in football. You want to give him the opportunities to make plays. I'm sure he welcomes that challenge. And that's the other thing that happens. And Q, you can speak to this. When a guy like Dallas goes down in your offense, somebody certainly feels the need to step up and sort of enhance their production. And believe me, AJ's ready to handle. The more you put on his plate, the more he'll be able to eat.
To your point, I think right after Dallas goes down, they're driving down the field, and they put A.J. Brown in one of those spots where Dallas Goedert is usually there on that tight wing, and he goes across the field behind the offensive line and into the flat. Throw him a nice, easy one, and he goes into the end zone for a touchdown. So you'll use a variety of people, but a lot of the things that Dallas Goedert did, you want to make sure that you keep that as a part of the offense.
Yeah.
The screen game has to be a part of your offense. Those little plays where Jalen's going to go out into the flat and he's sneaking someone out into the flat because you need 3 yards or you need 2 yards, those extensions, Nick says, of the run game, you have to have guys that will step in and do that.
And the big body that Dallas Goedert presents for defense as an advantage for the Eagles on offense.
Yes.
You're going to have to find a way to replace that. And it's a good thing we brought in Julio Jones, right? We brought in Julio. So we talked about the red zone impact that he could have. You may see more of Julio down in that area when you're talking about a guy. He obviously has great hands. Mm-hmm. He has the size and he has the agility and the ability down there in those tight areas that I'm sure if he's lined up on a safety or a linebacker, advantage Julio.
He gets attention.
Yeah. Yes.
He grabs attention.
And he says in the locker room, he's still got it. Do you expect more targets for Julio Jones here in the second half?
Absolutely. And I think just like Ike said, especially when you get down in the red zone area, because he's such a big body, the first touchdown catch he had as an Eagle, he goes up. It's a high ball in the back of the end zone. And you know that's where you want to throw to him when you're down there. He's going to outleap most defenders in that area. I think he's certainly a weapon when you get down there.
Absolutely. And something that's impressed me the first half of the season is when you look at Devontae Smith, and we knew going into this year that there were so many offensive weapons. There's only so many footballs. How are you going to break this up? I applaud how he handled not getting as many targets because we've seen the past couple of weeks, especially against the Cowboys, he is now succeeding going into the bye week.
Yeah, and he knows his opportunities are going to come. The one thing about receivers, Q, you know this better than either one of us do. when your opportunities present itself, you got to take advantage of them.
Yeah, and they're not all divas.
Right.
So, stop that.
Yes, they are all divas.
I'm glad you cleared that up.
I love that you make that point because Devontae is just buying his time. Every time someone scores, has a big play, he's the first guy there that's celebrating, knowing full well, as you said, that his opportunities are going to come.
And it's similar to last year, right? AJ had the middle portion of the season where he started to ascend and he was taking over a lot of games. And Devontae was sort of quietly going about his business, taking advantage of his opportunities when they presented itself. And then all of a sudden, we look up the last five or six games of the season, seemed like Devontae became the number one receiver on the team. And I think he set a franchise record for receptions last year. We had two receivers over 1,000 yards. The biggest thing that I love about Devontae's mentality right now is that he doesn't make it about him. And like Q said, he's one of the first ones there, always there to celebrate with his teammates. And he's happy for the success that they're having. But don't mistake it. He is a competitor. He's a fearless competitor. He knows how good he is, but he also understands the big picture. And he's all about team. So, you know, the Slim Reaver, he's going to get his opportunities, and he usually catches the ball when it comes his way.
Yeah, and options, they're a great thing with this Eagles offense. And something that I think needs to be cleared up, Mike, and I'm curious what you think of this, Eagles run game. You hear fans, they're clamoring for more carries. They're what's going on. But it seems like this Eagles offense has switched to a more pass-heavy offense, and it's working. So what's going on with the Eagles run game?
I'll keep it simple. You take what the defense gives you. Now, if the defense is a defense that you're going to have trouble running the football against, of course you're going to try and run the ball, but you don't want to run your head against a wall. If your least pass of resistance is on the outside, is throwing the football, that's what you do with the football.
Yeah, you got to be versatile in today's game.
Yeah.
You know, teams try to make you one-dimensional. The one thing I love about this Eagles offense, and it's really been this way since Nick Sirianni and his regime took over, is they have the ability to adapt and do whatever the game calls for itself to do. And one of the things I was impressed with last week was that even though the run game from an average per rush standpoint doesn't look great, I like the fact that DeAndre Swift had 18 carries, right? So I like the fact they showed the commitment to at least keep the defense honest and give them something else to think about.
Right.
I think that's where we have to always sort of balance out our attack as an offense, is that we don't get too heavy one-sided. And Coach Sirianni talks about this. You know, the run game comes in all different facets, right? It could be the screens. That's an extension of the run game. It could be the quick game, throwing it out to the wide receivers for hitches or wide receiver bubble screens. That's another facet of the running game.
Yeah.
You know, today's offenses aren't just strictly when you talk about running the ball, turn around and hand it to the running back. There's different ways that you could sort of extend the running game by being versatile on offense. And that's really what has made the Eagles successful under this regime, is that you can't put them in a box, right? You can't put them in a box. They have the ability to think outside the box. And it's worked out pretty good for them. The success rate speaks for itself. And I tell you, G, you can't run stunts like this unless you have unselfish players, because the first player is there to set up the stunt. He's not there to actually get the sack himself. He's there to set up the stunt guy coming around after they confuse the defensive lineman. And I know that's why Sean Desai has the confidence that they have in running all these stunts, because they have a bunch of unselfish players up front. And you can say it starts with a guy like Hassan Reddick, a guy who's coming off a double-digit sack season last year, career highs in total sacks, three straight years of double sacks, on his way to his fourth straight year of double sacks. And what's most impressive about this is that he seemingly got off to a little bit of a slow start this year because of the thumb injury, but he seems to be hitting his stride right now. And here's the thing that I love about Hassan Reddick, G. He's not only a force in the passing game, he is a willing run defender as a premier pass rusher. You don't often see that with guys in this league. He is a two-way defender when it comes to rushing the passer and playing the run. He has just as many tackles for losses as he almost do with sacks. How has his game sort of evolved in the importance of what he means to this pass rush up front?
Well, I think you know this. You're a defensive player, and you've played with a lot of really good D linemen in your career. I think that's a pride thing. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, these guys, look, Reddick knows he's going to make his money as a pass rusher, but now it's a pride thing to be able to step up and play the run. Look, we saw that in the game that I showed, the Miami game. We saw him early in the game make a lot of big plays early. But I think Josh Sweat on the other side is another great example of that. I mean, Sweat is a little bit of a physical freak with those long arms, the body type. He may be as complete a defensive end as there is in the game. And people don't talk about him because he's not getting 20 sacks. Maybe he could in a different situation. But when you have two guys on the edge like Reddick and Sweat, and then we know what they have inside, and teams now are starting to slide their center to Jalen Carter, they're realizing he's the guy you got to slide to. So now all of a sudden you've got a D-line that can be dominant in multiple areas. One other point I think is worth making, which I think goes unnoticed, is there's a lot of multiple front alignments. They just don't line up in one place. They really are multiple. They have guys who can play multiple positions along their defensive fronts, and I think that makes it a lot harder for offenses and offensive linemen to deal with the pressure concepts that they face.
Yeah, the strength of this defense is still the defensive line. We know how much the Eagles value the trenches on this football team, both offensively and defensively. And when you look at this Eagles defense, the one thing that reminds me so much of that historical pass rushing defense they had last year is that the defensive line has not missed a step. They've replaced some players and quite possibly replaced them with better players. You're talking about a youth movement inside with Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis. And even they got Fletcher Cox sort of turning back the hand of time and what he's been able to do this year. That interior part of this defensive line is also important.
And let's not forget Milton Williams. He's done really, really well through nine games.
This Eagles schedule, it gets tougher going forward. After the bye week, the Eagles head to Kansas City for that Super Bowl rematch. But Mike, I love what Jordan Davis said post-Cowboys in the locker room, celebrating a big win, and the mentality is already, so what, now what? Into the bye week 8-1, don't care, because we know we have a huge matchup coming up against the Chiefs.
Well, and I love that attitude, because they know there's a gauntlet of good teams that they're going to face. And the defense has to really get ready. I like what they've been doing, but I think it's going to be really important the bye week that they're able to get bodies healthy, get more guys onto the field. Love what Sean Desai is doing as a defensive coordinator, but it's going to be so important, especially at the back end. Think about this. The last 2 weeks, the only time they've started the same four guys in the secondary or the same five guys with the nickel guy. So they haven't had that continuity. Now you get some healthy bodies back. You get Kevin Byard more entrenched in the defense and understanding the defense better, you're going to have better results on the back end or the second half of this season going forward. What do you think?
I'm excited about seeing what this secondary looks like when they're all out there healthy and get to play together each and every week. You know, Sean Desai, I think, has done a good job of trying to come up with game plans each week that not only gives his players the best chance going up against the opposing team's offense, but also sort of highlights what those players do well.
Right.
Right. That's the one thing a coach sort of has a little bit of a quandary of doing is putting together a scheme that works well versus an offensive X's and O's, but also playing to your players' strengths and staying away from some of their weaknesses. And part of his job is trying to understand what these guys do well. Right. And you can only do that with the more information that you get on the players. So the bye week comes at a great time because the coaches get a chance to self-evaluate. They get a chance to also look back and see what the players can do well And Bradley Roby, throughout his career, has been one of the best nickel defenders in all of the league. And I think having multiple guys in there, and you get a young guy's credit for stepping in there and doing what they could do in Eli Riggs and Sidney Brown. Mm-hmm. But having someone in there that knows the intricacies of that position,
yeah,
I think helps the defense out immensely. And it also allows the coordinator to go deeper into his playbook with some of the things that he can do. So I'm excited about that moving forward. We have some high potent offenses that we're going to have to defend against. And when you know what you're going to battle with every week, it allows you at least to prepare to do battle.
Yeah, I can imagine it brings a lot more confidence to the field. And you mentioned Sean Desai and the coordinators. We were entering training camp. That was the big question. With two new coordinators on this Eagles team, frankly, a lot of people thought there'd be a drop-off. New language, trying to get to know each other. Mike, it really hasn't seemed to be a drop-off.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier in the show. All of the multiple fronts and the twists and the stunts that you're seeing a whole lot up front. I think the personnel is a big part of why this Eagles defense didn't really drop off. But also, Sean Desai starting to understand personnel. And you know, when you understand guys and what their strengths are, you're in much better position to make sure that you utilize that strength at the right times.
And an example of that is, we talked about it earlier in the show, when we're talking about some of the line stunts they do up front. They're doing that more than they did last year.
Sure. Right?
So they are being versatile in that standpoint. There's also multiple games from earlier this year that I can remember where, you know, we did a lot more sub-packaging. Also, we did a lot more disguising before the snap of the ball, coming out, blitzing a little more this year. So he's giving you all types of versatility on that side of the football to where an offense doesn't necessarily know what to expect. You don't get caught being in tendencies and being predictable as a defense. But I think the second half of the season, when you know the personnel that you have every week, it's going to allow that identity to sort of shape itself. I really do expect to see a much better defense. Not that they've been bad. They've been more inconsistent than anything. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see a more consistent defense the second half of the season, as long as our health allows us to be that way.
And Fletcher Cox talked about, we haven't really reached our identity yet. We're still searching for that identity. And I think a big part of that is what you're talking about, is Sean Desai getting to know these guys, know their strengths and weaknesses, and know when to trigger what they do best.
Because there's so many pieces on this defense.
Yes.
Just putting together a puzzle. And options are a great thing, but I've loved seeing, going into the second half of the season, when you still have the guys like Brandon Graham showing up. Jordan Davis called him the fun uncle out there. Because it was so great
to see.
Love that. Because I think at times, especially fans, when you talk to them, they want to see the young guys. They want to see what they're about. But, you know, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, they still have a job to do here.
Oh, yeah. Listen, the one thing I will always hang my hat on with this organization is that they have a great culture here. And I think, you know, Fletcher, Brandon, Jason Kelsey, Lane Johnson, those guys have been here so long. I got to throw Jake Elliott in there, too. He's been here longer than a lot of people realize. Those guys help set the culture of what this team is all about, what this locker room is all about. So when the young players come in, like the Devontae Smiths, the Jalen Hurts, these guys, they know exactly what it's like and what's expected of them here. And because they have great character, it's a lot easier for them to fall in line with the culture is here. And listen, Brandon Graham and Fletcher, Jason, Lane, these guys are all going to be Eagles Hall of Famers. We know what they've meant to this organization throughout their career. And quite frankly, as an Eagle, as a former player and as a fan of the team, I don't even know what it would be like to not see number 55 out there, see number 91 out there, 62 out there, 65 out there. They've become such staples of what we are as Eagle fans. They really exemplify what this organization is all about and what it really means to be an Eagle. And the young players pick up on that.
Uncle Brandon.
Uncle Brandon. Hey, Q, you know it's not good when they start calling you Uncle. When I first got called Uncle, I didn't know. I was like, is that a compliment or hold on? That means I'm getting older. So
just got real.
Yeah, but you know what? One thing about Brandon, Brandon has the perfect temperament for that, because he is a willing teacher. He is a willing mentor. And when his number is called, he's going to be ready to go. That's the one thing we all love about Brandon.
And again, be sure to check out Eagles Game Plan. It goes up digitally on Sunday across all Eagles channels. Or if you live in the Philadelphia area, special time this week, Sunday morning at on NBC 10 at 6:30 a.m. just due to the Germany game between the Colts and Patriots. So great stuff there from the Eagles Game Plan crew. Thanks to all of them. And thanks to all of you as well for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our X's and O's content here with Eagles Entertainment. That being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the Nova Care Complex, I am Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.